This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The Revolution with Juan McCartney is sponsored by J.S. Johnson, Burger King, Bud Light, Ron's Electric Motors, Island Wholesale, and Bahamas Firth.
Afternoon, Bahamas, and welcome to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. All right, we had expected that we were going to have the Minister of Economic Affairs, Michael Halkidis, here today, but I've been unable to get confirmation of that from his people, and he's not here as yet, so I expect that that's not going to happen today. In the second hour, we're supposed to be talking with Dr. Ali Mohammed, who is the leader of the new Black Panther Party in the United States of America. And so he's down here. He's doing some things with Candy Gibson from FOAM. And we're going to talk to him about why he's here and what we can learn from him in terms of the way forward for the Bahamas. He's the leader of the Revolutionary Black Panther Party, which is a continuation of the Black Panther Party that was very popular in the 60s and early 70s. I've watched several documentaries about the Black Panthers and seen them portrayed in several movies, so should be an interesting discussion to undertake. So we'll be talking with him in the second hour. So since we're not having Mr. Halkidis, let's talk about some other things that are making national news. So I hesitated to, I considered talking about a particular thing today, and I hesitated because I don't like talking about things when I don't have all of my information or all of the information that should be available publicly. And so I often don't like doing that, but I am going to start the conversation because of the fact that other people are talking about it who are in government, who, to me, I don't understand why they're talking about it, A, and B, they also have yet to provide the information that is required when we're talking about this level of spending. So I'm going to start off with saying this. People look at, well, hell, let me see how I can say this without roping everybody into it. People often look at people who are making public commentary and they try to figure out what their motive is, what their agenda is. And so I've been subject to a lot of that, and I speak publicly, so I don't expect people to not pay heed to what I say or not consider what I'm saying. And so just so you know, my agenda, no matter the administration, is to understand the truth so that we can understand whether what people who hold power are doing actually benefits the nation or if it benefits their own personal agenda or if they're being straightforward or if there's some cross-section of it's for political clout and it's for benefiting the nation. So when I speak about this, some people are going to get upset, but I struggle to care if you're upset or not on either side of the political divide, because all that I'm saying is for the betterment of the nation. And so I'm not on anybody's side. I just want to make sense as to what it is that is being said, all right? Because I didn't come up with any of this. So last week, you may remember me speaking about Before I say that, let me say this. It's 3 weeks into our cut that we're having, all right? If you've been following, all right, give yourself a pat on the back. 3 weeks, no alcohol. 3 weeks, reducing sugar in your diet, reducing unnecessary food, junk food. I was in the store on the weekend. I got some junk food for my kids. The guy was like, and you say you want to diet, you're getting junk food. It's for the kids. A, B, why are you watching what I'm buying? Does that make any sense? In any event, give yourself a pat on the back if you've gone through 3 weeks. We got three more weeks left of this, and we'll see where we are at the end of it. In any event, last week, you may remember me speaking about Minister of Public Works Alfred Sears giving a communication on the Andre Rogers National Baseball Stadium. So the headline read, $31 million needed to complete the stadium. So when I read that and I listened to Alfred Sears' communication, we've been unable to get in touch with Alfred Sears. Maybe someone listening to this will be in touch with him and he can clarify for us. When I listened to Alfred Sears' communication, he did indeed say that there's an additional $31 million needed. But while he was speaking during his communication, I listened to it, he was transposing certain numbers at certain points, so I figure that maybe he meant something other than what precisely was said. So he said, we are not here today complaining, but merely reporting in a transparent manner to this honorable house. He says additional funding will be required to complete the stadium in the amount of $31,349,566.28, and this is inclusive of VAT. Okay, Wolseley Construction Company is the company that's building the stadium. He said, the demand for the stadium is manifest, and we have $27 million sitting on the ground lying dormant for years. Okay, so I heard him say $31 million. I go, well, that doesn't sound right. The superstructure of the stadium is just about complete. Why would it cost $31 million? And then I looked at the contents of his speech, and he said that they're going to need an additional $700,000 approximately for material, equipment, and labor due to transitions between governments. Okay. He said that construction of ancillary buildings and concrete works such as ticker booths, batting cages, aprons, roof, structural support for batting cages, etc., was not priced in the tender process as drawings were incomplete and require $1.1 million for completion. He said the hardscape and landscape will need another $375,000. And he said that outstanding change order requests may be valued at $900,000 are pending. Okay, so if you add that up, that's about $4 million. If you add $4 million to the $27 million he already said was spent, that's $31 million. And so in my speaking about this stadium and what he said in Parliament, my thought process was that he was going to need $4 million more, and the stadium in total was going to cost $31 million. Not that they had already spent $27 million and another $31 million would be needed. Now, I contacted the House of Assembly to get Minister Sears' communication, which he tabled, but was not sent out by the government. And they told me that they were going to send it. I have yet to receive it. I'll double check all my messages in a moment. But as of this morning, I did not see where that communication was sent. So unless I miss something, and unless I'm completely misguided by what was said in the Office of the Prime Minister's press conference last Friday, then I have many, 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 many questions about this stadium. So again, I was under the impression that it was $4 million more, since what he listed was about $4 million, and that the cost so far was $27 million. And I don't know what else he would need outside of what he said. Someone said, well, maybe they need a jumbotron, and they got to commit other stadiums. And he didn't say that, though, right? Picture my surprise then when I listened to the Office of the Prime Minister's press conference on Friday, and they say the financial secretary, Simon Wilson, who would know if they need $31 million more, because he's the one who got to go find the money. The financial secretary, essentially, from what I'm seeing, confirms that it's $31 million more. Let me also say this, and you're going to get mad at me, but don't. Listen to my rationale. I have great respect for Simon Wilson as a public servant, as financial secretary. I've spoken with him on several occasions. His acumen is tip-top. I don't doubt his capabilities at all. However, since when do we ask the financial secretary? Maybe this is something Marlon Johnson like convinced y'all of, that the financial secretary explains policy decisions. I don't think it is, because when we would ask Johnson about particular policy choices, he would say you got to go ask the policymakers. So let me explain to you what the functions of the various people are. So since do we ask the financial secretary, who's the chief revenue collection officer in the government, since when do we ask the financial secretary to explain the decisions of policymakers? This is something new we're doing? When did we start this? All right? Here's how this works, right? And I, again, great respect for Simon Wilson. Simon Wilson doesn't get to decide what government money is spent where and how, all right? Simon Wilson, first and foremost, follows the law, all right? The Financial Audit and Administration Act and the recent Finance Act they passed last term, the Fiscal Strategy Act or whatever it's called. Again, I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. He first and foremost follows the law. So you will see in the Constitution things that must be paid for by the government. So if you look at your budget, there's a list of things that are statutorily required of the government to pay for, and they pay for those things first, Governor General, Auditor General, et cetera, right? After Simon Wilson gets done following the law, insofar as what has to be paid, then Simon Wilson looks at our obligations in terms of what debts we owe, all right? What salaries are owed, what pensions are owed, the valuation of certain government assets. He looks at those things. And then he looks at the policy decisions that the cabinet of the Bahamas makes in terms of what's priority to them, and he finds the money. So if the cabinet of the Bahamas says, we're going to go complete the stadium, we need $31 million, he's going to have to figure out where $31 million is coming from. Either they're going to borrow it or they're going to take it from somewhere else, etc. Simon Wilson doesn't decide if it's a good idea to complete the stadium or not. So I don't understand what the point is in trying to figure out how Simon Wilson feels about the rationale to spend an additional, according to this, an additional $31 million to complete the baseball stadium. Now, you heard me on Friday. I said, if it's $4 million more, I got no problem with that. I don't think we'll get all our money back, but it could be an overall benefit to the nation. If it's $31 million more, then we have to have an entirely different conversation. All right? And Simon Wilson isn't the guy who we ask why they're spending $31 million more, because that's not his decision, and that's not for him to justify. Let me see if I can help you with this. If Brave Davis and the cabinet, well, Brave Davis is Minister of Finance. If Prime Minister Davis and the cabinet of the Bahamas says, hey, a priority of my government is we want to go to the moon, right? We want to go to the moon. So we got Richard Branson, right? He says he can help us get to the moon. We need $100 million because we want to go to the moon. I'm sure it costs more than that to go to the moon, but we want to go to the moon as the government of Bahamas. Why? I don't know. Maybe the secret Decepticon base is on the moon and there's rare minerals from outer space that we can mine. I don't know why Brave Davis wants to go to the moon in this scenario, but he wants to go to the moon. You know what Simon Wilson's job is? Not to go, does it make sense to go to the moon, PM? No. His job is to say, I have to find the money because you want to go to the moon. That's it. That's all it is. A priority of this government is to go to the moon. As financial secretary, I got to figure out where we're getting this money from. Here are your options, etc. Not why you want to go to the moon. That's not what we asked Simon Wilson. That's what we asked Brave Davis and the cabinet of the Bahamas. So I don't necessarily want to know from Simon Wilson or Clint Watson, who's not in cabinet. And again, great respect for Clint. See how y'all did Clint bad with the Shabaka? I didn't do all that with y'all, did I? No. Because I only want to make sure that people who work for government are doing their job properly. I'm not watching all their other stuff. I'm not interested in why Simon Wilson or Clint Watson believes that we should spend an extra $31 million to complete this stadium. So when it was $4 million, I was all on board. Now that it's $31 million, that's not going to work for me without a much more in-depth explanation detailing exactly what accounts for the extra $31 million, and that no one else from the government of the Bahamas, no policymaker, no nothing, has come out and said, no, it's not another $31 million. It just adds up to 31, considering what we've already spent and the few extra million we plan to spend. Nobody said that. And it sounds like the finance secretary saying it is $31 million. Here's what I find astounding. All right, we're going to get back to the government too, but let's look at the public reaction to it. So you remember a couple of weeks ago when some Bahamians went to the UAE and they were sending videos back saying, we in Dubai, where y'all? Y'all home, stay home. Remember the public outrage, the searing, white, burning rage that Bahamians expressed? I also didn't understand what was going on with Dubai, but I wasn't tripping off it. Remember when the woman was saying, oh, the light turns on, the key card turns on the lights, and we were all like, oh, you podunk woman, get out more, and da-da-da. These people ain't been nowhere. Remember that? Remember when all the FNMs, just about all the people in leadership, came and they asked for an accounting of the Dubai trip, who went on the trip, a list of who all went on the trip, the rationale behind who went on the trip, and what the public considerations are and the benefits are for going to Dubai to spend $1 million. That's what the Office of the Prime Minister said. It was $1 million. For days and days and days, we went on and on about Dubai. And again, I'm a Bahamian. I can focus on petty stuff too. I'm not this great person who doesn't look at events that mean nothing in the grand scheme of things, and passes them by. I focus on petty stuff too, right? I focus on stupid stuff sometimes. Like someone put in our news group that Rihanna's pregnant, right? And though I don't really care about Rihanna being pregnant in the grand scheme of things, I want to know if Rihanna's pregnant or not. I'm not that detached from pop culture. So I don't need to know all the details, but I'll go, okay, Rihanna's pregnant. Good to know, right? So I can focus on the petty as well. Just like you guys with Dubai. I was focused right with you on Dubai, right? That was for $1 million, according to the government. All F&M leadership spoke up about it. Alfred Sayers says, we need $31 million more to finish the Andre Rogers Baseball Stadium. And the opposition says nothing. The Bahamian public just goes, okay, $31 million. Who cares? These governments always spending more money. You know what I think our problem is? We don't care when governments spend huge sums of money on things that we don't really see as personally impacting us or we don't have a vested interest in. We care when people on a personal level are benefiting from the government in a way that we're not. If it's $10,000, we care. If it's $30,000, we care. If it's a contract for $3,500 a month that a Bahamian got that seems too close to a minister or a chairman of a corporation, we have a very keenly vested interest in checking for that. We want investigations. We want a commission of inquiry. Remember they said about six different things they want a commission of inquiry for, right? When it's huge sums of money, when it's tens of millions of dollars for like roads or for buildings. You see the buildings out JFK, like the building that cost five times what it was originally projected. Like, you know how nothing ever comes in on budget that I can recall, maybe you can help me, that the government ever projects is going to be for a certain amount? And we just go, oh, okay, it's another $20 million, it's another $30 million, it's another $50 million. And we don't say a peep. But when it's $1 million, when it's one Bahamian got a ticket to Dubai, and I'm not justifying the Dubai trip, when it's one Bahamian got a ticket to Dubai and another Bahamian didn't go, we'll hop on social media, we'll become outraged, we'll be pissed right off. But when a minister of the government jumps up and says, we need another $30 million without adequately, to me, to my sensibilities, explaining where the other $27 million went and precisely what accounts for the entire $31 million more, then I got a problem with that. I also want to know, where's this $31 million coming from? Do you, with a $900+ million deficit this fiscal year, there's a loose $31 million to finish this stadium? Is that over two budgets? You said you should have some stuff going on by summer, full completion by December. Is there a loose $31 million in the budget I didn't know about? Are you going to borrow $31 million more to complete this stadium? Because I'm looking at your CapEx budget, and I don't see no increase of $31 million for no stadium. Can the Minister of Sports say what we spent, what we need $31 million more for? Well, Alfred Stair said about $4 million, so what's the next $27 million for? So this is my thing. If you're going to spend $60 million to build a baseball stadium, can I please get a detailed list of what all the $60 million accounts for? Or can someone explain to me that it's not actually $60 million? Because I still have a hard time believing this. But yet, nobody's refuting that it's an extra $31 million. How does the government say they need more money to complete a stadium than it cost to build almost entirely the superstructure of the stadium, and there's not really any public interest in what accounts for that? I don't understand what's happening. And so I have a great deal of respect for Alfred Sayers as well. I need to know what our $31 million is going to be spent on. I need to know why Wolseley Construction needs $31 million more to complete that stadium, according to the Minister of Public Works, when we've already paid them $27 million. Because this stadium, when it was first conceptualized under the last Christie administration, was supposed to cost $21 million. And now you're telling me it cost almost $60 million. Someone's going to have to explain that. Beyond the financial secretary, beyond the office of the prime minister's press secretary, some policymaker is going to have to explain exactly what the other $31 million is for, or at least the other $27 million, because Alfred shares detail about $4 million. Again, I'm trying to get his communication. Maybe I missed it, and he detailed another $27 million. But someone's going to have to explain to me what that is for, all right? I ain't tripping off Dubai, because that right there is 30 Dubai trips. I ain't tripping off y'all getting new cars. I ain't tripping off who went to Glasgow and who wife accounts for a ticket. $31 million more for that stadium? I need to know what that money's for. And no one has satisfied me as yet to explain that, okay? If BPL came to you, this is the thing we do, right? So BPL, remember when the generators got set on fire? And I was like, oh, things happen. Those generators cost $30 million a piece. That's our money. When PowerSecure got a business plan for $1 million, the public was crying bloody murder to see this business plan. How could you pay them $1 million? $31 million more for a stadium? Yeah, they're going to be able to play baseball. It's going to be a great bet. Oh, that's all beautiful, and that's great. That's flowers and rainbows. When it was $4 million, I could get with you. When it's $31 million, nearly 10 times as much as you're detailing, you're going to need to explain that to me, right? I'm going to have to really consider what's happening. Really, do we have to spend $31 million more for that stadium? Seriously? So kids can play baseball? I don't know that I feel so strongly about it now. Now that it's 31 more, when it was 31 in total after spending 27 so far, I was on board and say, yeah, let's finish it. There's a big yawning gulf between 4 million and 31 million. And so I'm saying this as sincerely as I possibly can. You're going to have to explain that to me. Beyond the financial secretary talking about the investment in the future. Again, I think Simon Wilson seems to be great at his job. Clint's great at his job. I need a policymaker who sat in cabinet to explain to me why we would spend $31 million more and exactly what that accounts for. And I would also like to see an Auditor General's report into the construction of this stadium so far and what was spent. I'm not satisfied. Not even close. All right? And I'm not saying that to be mean-spirited toward the current administration, but I'm saying if we're going to have a nation that makes sense, then you're going to have to make it make sense for me. All right? So I said, no, oh, this one went to Dubai, and this one got dressed like the Sheikh and all that. I ain't tripping off that so much, right? I want to account for my $1 million. Sure, no problem. But the 31, that's what I need to know about. And I would urge anyone, any policymaker who can explain this, or the Minister of Sports or the Minister of Public Works, you can call us. Please explain it to me. I'm very interested in knowing more about it. 323-6232, 325-4316, and 325-4259. The text line is 422-4796, 422-4796. I didn't accuse anybody of anything. I didn't say there's any wrongdoing going on or any wastage or whatever like that. I just need it to be explained to me. That's all. All right, let's take this phone call. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Revolution.
Hey, well, what's going on here? Can you hear me well?
Yes, I can.
Oh, okay. A pleasant good afternoon. How are you doing today?
I'm good.
Okay, good. I'm not calling to explain the $30 million or $31 million.
No, that's unfortunate. Okay. I was so hoping you would.
Yeah. No. I didn't listen to the minister's communication, but I have every confidence. Let me put it out there. I have every confidence in Minister of Public Works, Alfred Sayers QC, and if he makes a statement, it can certainly be explained transparently, and he would certainly be held to account for whatever statement he utters publicly. And so I have no concerns in that regard, and I'm not saying that you're casting any aspersions at all, right? Mm-hmm. However, what I did want to speak to is we have a serious issue, and I listened to your show last week where you were justified in stating that you all are going to ask the former prime minister questions and give him an opportunity to speak, right? Mm-hmm. However, now that you're on this topic, this brings me to the exact point of what he needs to be held to account for. The former prime minister made a lot of very poor and careless decisions with the taxpayers' monies. One, decisions that will lead to tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, having to be spent in excess of what the amount cost was originally, because they would have played around with the taxpayer money. They would have put projects on hold. The shipping industry took a turn for the worse. The construction industry took a turn for the worse, and so on. This is only the tip of the iceberg. I'm calling in to put the country on note. Everything that the government does that was left in place from the Christie administration 2017 And what was not completed under the Menes administration, it's going to cost considerably more, much more money, and it's going to be a further burden on the taxpayers, tax that the taxpayers are going to have to carry the duty of burden and care to pay off. And somebody needs to be held accountable, one. And the person that needs to be held accountable is the former prime minister. And so these are the kinds of tough questions. These are the level of accountability that needs to be placed at the feet of the former prime minister if he wants to be so media friendly all of a sudden. He needs to account for why the Bohemian people, for housing construction, for the stadium construction, for the hospital construction, for any upgrades with the schools that are necessary. Why did they play around with the Bohemian taxpayer money and now it's going to cost us so much money? And the second point, one, that I want to touch on is when we look at the fact that that for instance, to give a prime example, and then on this point, one, the road improvement project. If you recall, one, that happened over three administrations, right? Mm-hmm. And that cost pretty much was doubled in cost. And the reason, the primary reason that led to that doubling of cost was the cost of oil at the time. Do you recall that one?
Here's the thing about that, Ryan. There was a public accounts committee detailing the overruns on the road project. It wasn't that Bernard Nottage and Ryan Pinder knew what the road project cost. It's that the public accounts committee compelled the Ministry of Works and the Jose Cartolone Construction to give the cost of what was spent. In addition to that, when Brave Davis came and said, we're going to have to spend X amount to finish the road project, he didn't just pull that out of thin air. He sat with the IDB and signed an additional loan for the extra amount, and they explained exactly what it was for. Cost more money, I don't have a problem with that, Anton. I got to let you go here. That things cost more money, I understand. That things shift and change and delays cost money, yes. But you've got to explain to me why it costs what it costs. If it costs more to finish this stadium than it costs to put what is there up, which looks like, I'd say that looks 90% done with a superstructure anyway, then I need to know exactly why. Now, Menes can weigh in. Desmond Bastor, the former Minister of Works, can weigh in. Lanisha Roll, the former Minister of Sports, she can weigh in. Not a problem. But they're not the current government of the day that's saying, according to everything I see, that another $31 million is needed. So I'm not going to bypass the current government to go back to the former government to figure out why. I'd love to know why, right? But that's on those who hold power today to tell me. And then we can ask Dr. Menes those why it is like that. But we need to understand what this money is for from the current administration, because it's the current administration who's saying that we need the money. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Warning Sewage Corporation advises customers residing in Garden Hills 1 and 2 and surrounding areas of East Street and Soldier Road that the corporation will be carrying out repair work at the Hydro Tower at the top of Blue Hills this evening from 9 p.m. to 10:30 p.m., which may result in an interruption in water supply to customers in the listed areas. The corporation apologizes for any inconvenience caused and thanks customers for their patience as they make necessary repairs.
We believe in relationship banking. We take pride in getting to know our clients. You have access to knowledgeable, approachable ambassadors and financial coaches so that we can recommend the best product for you. At Fidelity, we care about you. From your financial health to your physical health, we can relate to you because we're just like you. Come and start your relationship banking experience with us today. Visit us online at fidelitygroup.com. Visit any of our branches in Nassau or Grand Bahama, or phone 356-7764 in Nassau, or 352-6676 for Freeport.
Fidelity, we're good for you. Burger King Nassau has taken spice to new heights with the new Baja Whopper and Baja Crispy Chicken Sandwiches. Enjoy your choice of a flame-grilled Whopper or crispy chicken filet topped with chipotle sauce, guacamole, jalapenos, cheese, lettuce, tomato, all on a fresh potato bun. The new Baja Sandwiches at Burger King Nassau pack plenty of flavor, and with an ice-cold Pepsi and fries or onion rings, it's the perfect way to fill your day. The Baja Whopper and Baja Crispy Chicken Sandwich are only available at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
Want to be the MVP of the party for the big game this year? Just take your favorite Frito-Lay chips, Lay Stacks, or Tostitos and salsa to the party, and you will be the MVP and have a chance to win cash. All you have to do is purchase any large Frito-Lay chips, Tostitos, salsa, or two Lay Stacks from participating grocery stores. Think you can throw the football? Well, come and play the throw and win game this Saturday, 1 to 3 p.m. at Solomon's Yamacraw. Just throw the football through the uprights with instant prizes, including tablets. Frito-Lay distributed by Island Wholesale.
There's only one way to have a better morning.
How?
Start your mornings the best way with our 2 for $6 breakfast sandwiches at Wendy's. For a limited time, choose any two of your favorite breakfast sandwiches, including the fresh Kraken Sack Muffin, honey buttermilk chicken biscuit, double sausage muffin, or the sausage egg and cheese biscuit. Wash it all down with our cold brew shake or coffee. Better mornings always start at Wendy's. Wendy's, different inside and out. Airport locations.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. Let's see. This says, good afternoon, Juan. I beg to differ with you concerning Wilson's responsibility to justify the government's policy decisions. A good example is the PS of Education has a responsibility to get behind and push the policy of the government. They don't make policy, but because they're in charge of those ministries, they should justify how and why the policy is moving in that direction. That's fine. You can differ with me, but to have the financial secretary explain that, well, there's a social benefit for it, that's all well and good. But he didn't make that decision. I want to talk to the people who made the decision. That's what I want to hear from. That's who I want to hear from. The people who actually said, hey, let's go spend the extra $31 million. Because that's a conscious decision of cabinet that had to be made. All right? I'm not trying to knock the PLP or the FNM. You guys get this confused. This is all our money, right? So all the VAT money, the real property tax money that y'all are complaining about, all that, that's our money that's being spent. And if you're spending my money, you got to show me that there's justification for it and detail it for me. Like I'm just give you a house, an anecdotal example, right? So if you give your wife $300, let's say, to go to the grocery store, and your wife calls you and goes, hey, send me $400 more, please. What's the first question that's going to come out of your mouth? For what? Right? You're not going to go, sure thing, here's $400 extra from the... You're going to want to know, wife or no wife, what do you need $400? That's more money than I gave you to do the thing in the first place. So you're going to want to know, right? If the contractor who gave you the quote for your house comes back and go, well, to finish the house, well, it was $250,000. To finish it, we're going to need another $300,000. You're going to go, well, what did you do with the money that happened before? And you got to justify that for me. And the next question is, where are we getting the money from? I got to go back to the bank. I got to cut someone else. Where are we getting this money from? Let's do a phone call. I got a lot of your text messages we're going to speak to. He said he'd be a bit late. Dr. Ali Muhammad in the next hour. This is not to trash anybody. I just want to have a standard where we explain what we're doing with the money. And I don't think that's an onerous standard to have. So far, I don't understand what $31 million more is going to. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Hello. Good afternoon. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
The government shouldn't touch that unless the Auditor General goes through every penny that was spent and come back to them and state why this is going to cost $31 million. It'll be ridiculous for them to spend that when the initial cost was never that. That would be completely stupid. Go back, let the Auditor General advise you as to why, what was spent, what was the cost, and even whose fault was it, why it took so long for it to be done. Because if the contractor is sitting here with his equipment and is expecting to be paid for stuff he had sitting here, then that's a problem too. Auditor General needs to get involved.
Yeah, I agree. Somebody's gonna show me a real good breakdown. Alfred Scherz explained that we'd already spent $27 million. And looking at it, I could go, okay, fair enough. And there were delays, X, Y, Z, and construction costs escalate. You left the big, huge crane there for months and months and months. I can understand an extra $6, $8 million. I can understand an extra $10 million over the course of years and years. Twice as much money? I'm going to need a deeper explanation. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
And Happy New Year, man.
Happy New Year.
This is my first time calling into you for the year.
Oh, great.
I tried calling last week when you was discussing the stadium issue, but on the both three occasions, I don't know, for some reason, the call dropped out.
Okay.
So I say, you almost see put Kermit them in retirement.
No, they're still around.
Because they resolved that issue then.
But, I got you.
Like you, when I heard the cost of the stadium, I too questioned the amount. And, you know, why $31 million? And since then, I was able to get some information. I'm not calling to explain to anyone, but just passing on to you the information that I
sure.
I was told that when the government changed, nothing was done to the stadium or allocated to continue the completion of the baseball stadium. Also, what happened since then, some changes were made, some additions were made to the current stadium. In other words, they added some other element that they said would be able to bring in some revenue. In terms, I think when they were talking about area where you could host events, that would be a revenue generator. In addition to that, if you look at this stadium started under the Christie administration. This is now going into year 12 of this stadium. So the quote that was initially given for the stadium in the state that it was in then would have been, I think, they said around 20-something million. Since then, this is now going, like I said, the whole term of the F&M, nothing was done. So if you look at the cost, or they said the cost of material to complete the stadium has almost doubled. And what I did on my own, I called around to some of the local businesses here, and I was told that I was paying $22 for a sheet of plywood in 2017, that sheet of plywood is now costing me $45. So they're just using the plywood as an example to show the cost of material has increased, which means to complete the stadium with the addition, the material cost, I was told, is going to cost an additional 25% increase minimum. So if you look at what the original cost, and like I said, using my business acumen, timesing that by the initial cost, I can see a huge cost. In addition to that,
I gotta go to news, but okay. You're doing a lot of theorizing here. I'm asking what cost what. You say plywood, right?
Not theory.
No. It is theory. How much plywood they need?
No, I don't. I'm only using.
How much concrete do they need?
I'm only using that as an example.
How much steel do they need?
Okay, like I.
You don't know, right?
No, I don't know.
Okay. So you don't know.
Some of the reasons given as to why the cost would increase.
I'm going to say the second thing is whoever told you no work was done during the last administration lied to you. I watched it go up.
When I say no work, no major work was done, I passed a stadium 10 times. At least 10 times a week. And I saw the little work that was going on. So they don't mean, they talk about major work. No major work was done. But anyway, I got to say eventually, I think you're going to get the answers you're seeking, because I believe there should, I could see a cost going up at least $20 million. I can see it.
Okay.
All right.
All right. I thank you for that, and I thank you for calling in. I don't do hocus pocus, right? You got to tell me what it is. Like, if you're saying $31 million, that means Wosley's building it, right? That means Wosley gave you a quote, yes, and said to you, here's what it costs to finish this day. That's how construction works. It doesn't work in straight guesstimation, right? You have engineers, you have construction companies, you have architects. They tell you the scope of work, what the work will cost, what materials cost. So somebody needs to tell me that. Because I'm not interested in guessing. I'm interested in hard data. All right. I know construction costs have went up. No problem. But I need details. Let's go to the news break. We'll be back.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas. This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. We were talking about the stadium. I believe we'll have Dr. Ali Mohammed here in a bit. We'll speak with him then, and we can pick up the stadium issue another day. Again, don't mix me up. I'm not saying there's any wrongdoing going on. I'm not saying anyone's not saying what is accurate. I'm saying that a greater level of detail is needed. All right, for the $31 million. I think that's fair. All right. I just don't have faith that there's a justifiable reason for the $31 million without actually seeing it. All right. I'll also say this. A lot of you won't like it. Some of you won't like it. If it costs $31 million to finish that baseball stadium, we could finish that another time, okay? Because $31 million could buy a lot of ambulances for the Family Islands, could outfit a lot of clinics for the Family Islands. $31 million could hire a lot more nurses, hire a lot more doctors, buy more beds for hospitals, can fix schools in the Family Islands and in New Providence, build schools. $31 million can help with the restoration from Hurricane Dorian in Grand Bahama and Abaco. Before I shoot $31 million into that stadium, I need to understand how the other priorities are being addressed. Because I like baseball, and it's good for the kids who can matriculate through a system, and it's good to have a stadium that's going to bring some revenue in. But don't kid yourself. Stadiums don't make money unless they're affiliated with a professional sports team. Okay? Because you got to charge for tickets, for entry, and there's broadcast television money from the NFL and the huge networks that go with that. This isn't that deep, right? We're doing it in the national good, and we make these decisions all the time that we're going to do something that's in the national good. But unless you can really detail for me $31 million and show me a great cost-benefit analysis, then I got some other things I want first. So if you can show me that those things are being addressed first, right? Like the clinics that went untouched in Cat Island during the former administration, like the airport terminal that y'all say y'all want a bigger one in Cat Island, like these things, until a lot of other things are being addressed and I see that there's concrete measures in place for that, then I'm not hot up to spend $31 million to finish that stadium. I know you're going to say, oh, the steel's going to rust and all that. You know, I need justification. That's all I'm saying. Let's take a phone call, and then we'll do some text messages. This says, I don't know one. You had two people call about the ballpark on Thursday, but you weren't sure, so we couldn't escalate. I still have issues with the 30,000 we're using every day on the ground, Luke Hyen. I want the Freedom of Information Act. I want Cabbage Beach access, and I want to know what's going on with the tanker that sank, what we learned from it, and also about deploying more police to Bimini to deal with human smuggling. So, nah, we ain't all watching Dubai. Fine, no problem. And on last week, my feelings on the stadium were based on the information that I had available to me. In my wildest dreams, I did not think that he was literally saying $31 million more to finish the stadium. It says, Juan, did the government get three quotes for the stadium originally? You see, we spend money like the states because we want to live like them. Problem is, we can't print money like they can. We rich. And all I'm asking for is accountability. You know, I'm not asking for anybody to be strung up. I just want accountability. I just want someone to sit down and explain it to me. It says, Juan, I agree. If we're going to raise $31 million more, how about we invest that in food security? I mean, we have a tableau of options, right? Hi, Juan. I'm curious as to why a church has been given a deal to train apprentices instead of creating a school in conjunction with BTVI. I'm unfamiliar with what you're speaking about. Let's go to the phone call real quick. Okay. No, you're not there? All right, give us a call back before Dr. Ali Muhammad comes through. This says, hi, Juan. I thought I heard incorrectly. I respect Alfred Sears. He needs to come to Parliament with the facts and documents. How come the opposition and former Minister Bannister have not clarified to confirm or deny the claim? This says, good day, McCartney. Thank you for bringing this vexatious issue to the fore. I feel trapped. What are we going to do with the blank, blank superstructure, unfinished and unoccupied? Accountability required all around ASAP. Hi, Juan. The pitch was built facing the wrong direction, so the sun is in the pitcher's face at a crucial time. They may be trying to correct that. So who owns Wolseley Construction? We need to get... Okay, all right. So... I'm not a baseball fanatic, right? But I have questions about the pitch being in the wrong direction. Doesn't the sun move in the sky, last I check, or does it just stay on one side of it? So wouldn't the sun be in the pitcher's eyes in any stadium at a certain point during the day? No? You can build a stadium where the sun doesn't shine in the pitcher's eyes? Okay, I don't know. I don't play baseball. Maybe. If it's a diamond, right? Anyway, never mind. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, man, we don't need to spend the money on that right now. Because right now, we have a lot of people right now where they could help out a lot of different like, organizations and the government and private sector where they could help out people who are suffering. Right now, they should invest that in some farmers, man. Let's try to see if we could try at least invest some of that in farming and you know, things we could really actually help out the country because that's their living to sit there and then they got to pay people to watch that and clean that and maintain that so they still lose.
Well, I mean, I agree. We could have a conversation about what we would prefer to spend the money on. I think that's fair.
We don't mind the stadium and this and that, no. But right now, man, We that's too much money right now, and we have people crying, trying to live in this country. You know, I mean, boy, they can put their foot right in their mouth.
Yeah.
They can put their foot right in their mouth.
This is strange to me. I don't understand. I need somebody to really explain it to me. All right? That's what I need. And I understand there's still work to be done. But $31 million more work. You know what this is like? This is like that the Paul Adderley building, right? That was supposed to cost like $10 million, but ended up costing almost $50 million like 15 years later. Right? And then when we look at public officials and go, we don't really know if you're giving us value for money. This is why. Because you say one thing and these things go on for years and years and years. And somebody's getting millions and millions and millions of dollars to build a project that sometimes costs 5, 6, 7, 8 times more ultimately than was quoted in the first place. It says, let me mark this day. I actually agree with you on. That's fine. I want to get Michael Foster, the architect, on the show to explain it. Okay, sure. Someone got to explain it to me. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get how. The sun rises in the east. I get that. At a certain point, the sun is going to be on the top of the sky, right? And that's a problem. Okay, I don't know. Y'all know. I don't play baseball. I'm not a architect. Said Juan, was that not what was said about sidewalks? See, when they said $20 million for sidewalks, all right, Desmond Bannister came out and he said it's not $20 million for sidewalks. He said the sidewalks are about $2 million. He said there's lots of other things, parks, et cetera, that we're doing. Now, I never got a fulsome like breakdown that I can recall of that, but he came out and disputed that it was $20 million for sidewalks. Not that that changed the thing. Says, good afternoon. I don't believe the drawings was incomplete. Before the project was started, you have to ensure the scope of works was completed with all features and functions. The global pandemic put a hold on resources or increase of resources. Therefore, the government needs to show and explain the amount. That's all I'm asking you to do is explain it. Explain it and then explain the rationale that says, we think this is the best spend of our money. All right? That's all. That's what I want. Because you're the government. You have carriage of our fiscal affairs while you're in power. We just want it detailed and properly accounted for. Let's do a couple of calls before we get any further. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Hello, good afternoon. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm here. How are you doing?
Sure, good. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm disagreeing with you a little bit. I understand where you're coming from, but you see, nothing is too good for this country. And this new government represents a new way of thinking. Now, when you analyze just from your last one of your callers today, showed how long it took for the stadium, a first-class stadium, okay? And so you see what Atlantis did with the volleyball, okay? So I'm sure if we could find money to do everything else, the government would make money from this. This country would make money from this. You're talking about baseball. Do you know how many people, how many Americans that visit our country every year love baseball? And while they're here, we can invite, yes, the baseball of America to this country. And so I disagree. And we could find money to do everything else. We could find the money. But I understand what you're saying. And I think the Bohemian public owes the government owes the Bohemian people that much for someone who legislates, a cabinet minister, to clarify it on behalf of the revolution and your listeners and the wider public in general. But nothing is too good for you or this country, especially with the young children that been through in the last two, almost going for...
Yeah, I hear you. Nothing's too good. That's all well and good. Can you afford it? Right? Nothing's too good for me. I want a Rolls Royce, so therefore my children Don't go to the school I want him to go to. I don't pay my light bill. What, you know, sure, nothing's too good. What can we afford? What's cost beneficial? Those are the questions I want to know. I want a Benz too. I got a Kia, right? I want a G-Wagon. I want to go and buy that. And then, you know, we can't have certain things, but nothing's too good for me. You can't afford everything. I'm not against spending money on the baseball stadium. I just need you to explain to me what it's for and rationalize why. And I don't think that's a big ask. Let's do the calls. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. McCartney.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, I was prompted to call. You know, I'm vexed. You know, I kind of agree with Amos. Nothing is too good for us. But as far as the pandemic protocols and the social restrictions and all that, right?
Yeah, but 52. Listen, nothing's too good for my wife, okay? My 10th anniversary's coming up, and I want to buy her a 15-carat diamond ring to celebrate yeah. it. But I can't afford it.
But not only that, Mr.
We have other priorities.
Mr. McCartney, not only that, that's like in this times now. We see the inflation, right? And so even as the food store the other day, I decided instead of doing broccoli, I would do the purple cabbage with the mushrooms, et cetera, the portobello mushrooms. What I'm saying is, let me get to this quick. That would be putting money down a black hole because of the pandemic situation right now with social distancing, et cetera, et cetera. What Amos said is all well and good, but that's pre-pandemic. You understand what I'm saying, Mr. McCartney?
Mm-hmm.
It would be a waste of money to pour $31 million, but I have a joke for you. And nothing is too good for us, right? So maybe the men associated of the Bahamas have to get together and put together $45,000 to get a Lay's machine. So instead of using this 120-year-old outdated TURP for prostate surgery, right? BPH, etc. Maybe the government could spend $45,000. I'm surprised that the hospital don't have any, and it was out of commission for years. So what it does is it will limit hospital time and bleeding, excessive bleeding for BPH. And so that's what I'm afraid, that they don't have an MRI machine. It says something, and nothing is too good for us. So the MRI machine would avoid invasive procedures like biopsies. I know Dr. Pinder's on saying they have new innovations in the urine testing for cancer and all, et cetera, because, you know, this is something that I have to do constantly at my age. You understand what I'm saying, Mr. McCartney? Because it's a slow-growing prostate. But those are the things that concern me, Mr. McCartney. So $45,000 for a Lay's machine, Mr. McCartney, come on, to safeguard someone, man, the man that is the father of this nation, bless up. $45,000, man, you can't afford that?
Yeah, I mean, well, nothing's too good, so. Says, I don't know baseball either, but if mistakes were made, then the companies, whether the project manager, architect, contractor, engineer, needs to pay for that, not the taxpayer. And I agree with your caller's texture, that much money, that the money could be much better used. It says, LOL, the sun got to be in either the pitcher's face or the batter's face. Sun got to be somewhere. Free glasses, free sunglasses. That'll be about $100,000. Scrap the $40 million. One of my friends who plays baseball, he played baseball at a competitive level. He says that the stadium is in the wrong place, is designed incorrectly. Most baseball games are played in the afternoon because the stands face the east. The sun is hitting the stands for the greater part of the day. Would not only affect the pitcher, but watching from the stands would also be very uncomfortable. Warm-ups would be in the height of the day. The same thing happens at the National Stadium. If I remember correctly, the premium stands are in shade in the heat of the day. Okay, well, that's a good explanation. That makes a lot of sense, actually. So when the FNM came to power, they said the stadium would cost $41 million to complete. Do an investigation in that stadium. They milk in the, I remember it was $21 million when it was originally proposed. I don't know where the FNM said $41 million. It says, bro, $50,000 on a Christmas tree, $300,000 on virtual Junkanoo, $5 million on Dubai. $5 million on Dubai. I didn't hear $5 million. So stadium operational costs also need to be discussed. What's the cost of operating the current Thomas A. Robinson Stadium? All demolition of former public buildings should be explained in cost and benefits. Let's go to the phone lines. Yep. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Hello, good afternoon. Are you there? They're not there. Let's go to another line. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Good to hear you. I'm good. Here's the situation. I just came from the mechanic getting my car sorted. Next, you know, on Lake Boulevard, on Court Avenue, it's this big, giant-sized hole. And, boom, into the hole I go. I'm
ouch.
Like, Paige and Ministry of Works, please, Happy New Year, and please get your crew out there. Please, at the corner of Lincoln Boulevard, Court Avenue, and get I mean, pave all the road, please. Please. Thank you, Mr. Bowling.
Okay, Lincoln Boulevard and Cordova Avenue. The Ministry of Public Works is currently otherwise engaged, doing something with Village Road. They're starting to dig it up, so, you know, I want to see them do that as soon as possible. It says, Juan, it is sad that on this world day of violence against men and boys, you guys don't speak about it, but glad to talk about violence against women. Sad. Were you like holding on to that from last week? I don't know what today is. If it's World Day of Violence Against Men and Boys, thanks for bringing that up. But we weren't talking about violence against women either. We're talking about the baseball stadium, which requires a discussion to me. Let's do the phone line. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Hi.
Hey, McCartney.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, thank God for life. I don't care if the architect was Michael Jackson, who did the architect for that.
Okay.
I think they need to explain what they want this $31 or $30 million for, the extra $30 million for. And after explaining it, understand that it's more important things to do right now. They need to put that on hold. That's what I don't like about these politicians. They say they listen to us, but they don't listen to us. It's like nothing changed. Friends, families, and lovers. That'll be inconsiderate. That'll be a cold government right now, in spite of all the things we're going through, to find $31 million to finish that stadium. It's like nothing changed. Friends, families, and lovers. It's all about the greedy, not the needy. What about all the needy things we need right now? Paul, what do you name? Paul Simon or something like that?
Simon Wilson. Now, look, again, I'm not saying don't finish the National Stadium. I'm saying that we got to have a conversation about priorities when we're talking about another $31 million on top of a $27 million already spent. And in any event, we're going to table this discussion, and we're going to continue it another time. I'm going to go to a break, and then we got Dr. Ali Muhammad is here with us, and we're going to speak with him for the remainder of the show. Again, I've been trying to get more information on this, and I'm going to continue to try. And I'm not saying that anything untoward has happened or any level of darkness has gone down. I just need to understand why we're spending this much money to finish this stadium, and I don't think that's an unfair question. Stay tuned. We'll be back on the other side of this break.
Important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
At Ron's Electric Motors, they repair and rewind all major brands of electric motors, including water pumps, generators, and the generator's back end, welding machines, electric lifts, air compressors, battery chargers, and more. They're equipped to handle up to 850 kilowatts and rewind up to 450 horsepower motors. They're conveniently located on the corner of Wolf and Clarence Roads and are open weekdays 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturdays till noon. They offer 24 hours emergency assistance. You can reach them at 242-356-0249.
My Gateway is the centralized, safe, secure way to access and pay for government services online. Go to mygateway.gov.bs and log in to request a police character certificate, renew your passport or driver's license, and more. Receive emails confirming requests and alerts when documents are ready. You must have a valid government-issued ID in order to collect documents. MyGateway is fast, easy, and convenient. Go to mygateway.gov.bs and register today.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. Joining us in studio today, we have Dr. Ali Mohammed, who is the leader of the Revolutionary Black Panther Party. So great to have you with us, Dr. Mohammed. We appreciate you. I first understood that you were here in the Bahamas when you were with Candy Gibson. Yes. From Foam, and she was visiting certain areas. I'll be honest with you, I did not realize that the Black Panther Party had been relaunched in this new form or that you were leader of it. But when Candy told me you were here, I did some research on you. Yes. And it's showing that you're doing a lot of work in the United States in black communities mainly, and that's excellent. Yes. And it also talked about this diverse background that yes. you hail from. So that says you were born in Ethiopia, and your father has Caribbean roots, and your mother has Caribbean roots. Yes. And so I was interested in why you would be in the Bahamas doing this type of work when there was a lot of work going on in the United States.
Well, when it comes to oppression and it comes to human rights and when it comes to really, let's say that trying to get this thing together for the mission and purpose of just human beings actually being in a situation and circumstance where we have self-sufficiency and resources and just, you know, just being together, that's a universal struggle. So it's not just bound to one area. And then when it comes to the struggle and plight for people of African descent, that's a whole different dynamic as well. I mean, we have a large diaspora and we're very divided and we don't know, but to deal with it in this context, you know, our overall mission, ideology, philosophy is what I call as lone collectivism, lone black collectivism. What that is to feed, clothe, shelter, train, defend the people. And that's so that the people could have self-sufficient to be able to do that for self. So our purpose and mission is to black people with oppressed people, period. So that means that who's ever oppressed, right. we stand for the human rights of human beings. It's just the fact that, unfortunately, since people of African descent tend to be the most oppressed, you know, we stand up for us as hard as we can and with due diligence and almost exclusivity, but, you know, in a predominant way in context.
Absolutely. And I look at, because I've read a lot about the original Black Panther Party yes. and their mission, and a lot of it, a lot of the media attention focused on yes. militancy
yes.
and them having being at odds with police yes. During the 60s and early 70s, trials and yes. the FBI trying to infiltrate it and break it down. But at the core of what the Black Panther Party was about, as far as I'm aware, is that the people who founded the party wanted to take care of their communities because they believed their communities were being neglected.
Yeah.
And that makes a lot of sense, particularly in the context of the civil rights era, particularly in the context of black Americans being such a minority in such a large country. However, when you look at countries that are in the Caribbean, we have countries that are majority black, but yet we still see that so many people who are black are still living in conditions that are oppressed, just as a lot of people in the United States are. And I wonder, have you given a lot of thought as to what accounts for that?
Absolutely, 100%. So it's a very controversial question. Not that you're being controversial. I'm just saying to answer it because knowing the answer to that. So here's the issue. All over the world where you have former colonies, all over the world where you have people who either experienced, you know, the transatlantic slavery dynamic, or at that time were an indigenous or Tutunis people who were invaded to open up the lands for that, you will have what we have here in Bahamas today. Unfortunately, we have neocolonialism here. And so though the government tries their best, you know, I know some people may feel otherwise, but I feel that, you know, the governments in the Caribbean, those who are of goodwill and good character, they try their best. Though we try our best, we are still under the actual whip, and I'm speaking 100%, and I'm not going to bite my tongue, of the people who had us under slavery and colonialism. It was just not too long ago when the money had the Queen of England on it. You know what I'm saying? So this is the thing, what I want to say. Most of the Anglophone nations that basically were former colonies or former plantations also have the same thing, where a certain percentage of the money at one particular time, I don't know how the economics are now, also went back to England. So this is the thing. So though you may see African faces or people of melanin, you know, melanated faces, the thing is that we are still under the same oppression. It's just in blackface, or as some revolutionaries would say, a sham independence. Because the people, if you don't have self-sufficiency, you're not. And I'm going to say this. Okay, there was a Holocaust in Nazi Germany. Adolf Hitler was a very notorious sociopathic person, right? And those victims and survivors of that Holocaust, because of what they went through, they got reparations, restitution, a nation and land of their own, technology, and a very deep infrastructure. They have great military scientists, military might. I'm talking about Israel. I don't want to get into the politics and the division and ethnic warfare between the Palestinians. And that's not my agenda or purpose of saying that. I'm just saying they're Holocaust. And I won't take that away from anyone. But at the same time, we collectively in the diaspora have gone through a Holocaust. The transatlantic slavery was the Black African Holocaust. We can't leave that out. I know in the Caribbean we have so much nationalism, and I don't mean the context I had to use in the U.S. Nationalism has some kind of racial overtone, so I don't mean like that. I mean, we're proud to be Bahamians. We're proud to be Trinidadians. We're proud to be Jamaicans. We're proud of that. But at the same time, some of that in a social engineering context disconnects us from the collective understanding that we're all still in the same dynamic of oppression and the same historical dynamic of oppression. So to deal with that, that comes from the brunt of slavery and us not getting the reparations and restitution that we need. So the Bahamian government needs reparations and restitution from Britain. The Bahamian government needs reparations and restitution from the Dutch. And the Bahamian people exclusively need reparations. I'm not talking about grants or some kind of academic stuff. I'm talking about liquid economic assets and resources for land and development also. And when I say liquid economic dynamics, I'm not talking about some money you put forward where you could give us the dollars today and then you drop your dollar tomorrow. No, I mean, it's still got to be backed by resources, gold, silver, something tangible that we won't have that issue. So that, to the answer that question in a short way, you know, that's my Bahamian background. You know, we're storytellers, right? But to answer that in a very simple way, it is because of the actual what's the best way to say this? It's because of the history of slavery and oppression. And we were people who walked away from that with nothing. We just did for ourselves. And so this is why the suffering goes on. And that people want to blame the governments. You know, they want to say, oh, our government is so messed up in the Bahamas. Our government is so messed up in Jamaica and Trinidad. But it's not the government's fault that you as a person is oppressed. It's those who actually even oppress the government.
We get this sentiment sometimes. Well, I don't know if you're familiar, but anyway, there's Government House at the top there, yeah. The Malthus William, and there was a statue of Christopher Columbus there. And last, we call it National Heroes Day, used to be Columbus Day, a guy took a sledgehammer and started destroying the statue. And he got locked up, and now the statue's covered up. And I wanted him to pulverize the statue.
Yes.
And my whole thing is that I don't know how we move forward while we still cling to this colonial past. And we celebrate it, and the only thing we've transferred is which people are fulfilling these colonial roles instead of creating a new system for ourselves. And we have a sentiment among many that says, well, let's just move on, right? Let's move on from slavery. Let's move on from colonialism. And I'm willing to do that. But before we do that, let's give back all the land that you benefited from during slavery, during colonialism. Let's give back all the money, all the resources, all the generational wealth, and let's all start on an even playing field, and then we can let slavery go. But until we have some sort of parity, it's impossible to kind of just say forget about it, because our past informs where we are today, and indeed our future.
That is you put that together so powerful and so beautiful, and that's the reality of it. You could say, see, this is the trick what they do, because no other people in the world deal with this, you know. So when people who were, again, in Germany had their issue, they were able to actually get justice, and the justice for what they went through, a Holocaust and genocide and ethnic cleansing and crimes against humanity and the violation of their human rights, they got reparations, restitution, and land, right? So here's the thing, in our context, oh, let's deal with this. You go in Europe, you know, when they had the whole process with different countries, Bosnia, Herzegovina, you go into even Africa, in the Sudan, when there were issues going on, you know, and the people were victims of ethnic cleansing and crimes against humanity. They were able to actually get southern Sudan, and then you had northern Sudan, and they got restitution and a land of their own and resources. Everybody all over the world. Whoever goes through ethnic cleansing, genocide, deprivation of land, and the actual oppression against their very own autonomy, they legally get reparations and restitutions. That's not conjecture. That's not a question. That's not a religious thing. Should we move on or what your belief is? That's the law. According to international law, people in the Bahamas, the citizens of the Bahamas, are owed reparations from the UK, from the Dutch, and others who were the oppressors and colonial masters here. And the same thing with people in the United States of America. Those who oppressed the U.S. government and Europe owes reparations and restitution. And it's not a game. It's not a joke. It's the law. The question is, when are we standing together collectively to do it? And to be honest with you, that's the platform and the party that we stand on. And for our people to get reparations and restitutions. In the states, we do human rights tribunals where we go from city to city and state to state where people are able to express their grievances on the current ethnic cleansing and crimes against humanity. Because some of us don't know how serious that is, you know. If you live in a country and you don't have adequate water, you don't have resources, you don't have food, you don't have adequate housing, that's actually a violation of your human rights, because according to the International Declaration of Human Rights, it says that all of us are supposed to actually have sufficient homes, resources, food, and to be respected as a person before the law. So what does that mean? Not to get off point. That means that if I'm in a country and I'm a citizen of a country and a law enforcement officer pulls me over, they're supposed to respect me and treat me as a human being. They're not supposed to disrespect me. They're not supposed to treat me like I'm not human. They're not supposed to dehumanize me. So when they do that, that's also a violation. No government official is supposed to do that. So what am I getting at? There's a lot of things that violate us as human beings in the countries and nation states that we live in. But the basis of us actually getting to where we need to go and to deal with the oppression and the poverty that we're dealing with is reparations. We can't dance around that or get around it. But collectively, our unity. So us united together to get that is very important. I know CARICOM got together, and even this country agreed that reparations was needed. The Bahamas.
Yeah, we had a reparations committee that started off very seriously, but I don't know that it went anywhere. A colleague of mine at the newspaper, Travis Cartwright Carroll, he was on the committee. Our current foreign affairs minister, he was very vested in it, but it all fell apart, and he believes in reparations. As do I. I'm not sure what it looks like. A lot like what you said,
yes.
But I'll say this. I lose faith when I see that the former prime minister of Jamaica, Portia Simpson Miller,
yes.
She had the former prime minister of Great Britain, David Cameron, in Jamaica, and she talked about reparations, and Cameron basically shut it down outside of saying, well, we might give you some money for some social programs or some prisons or whatever like that, but we're really not set up to give you any monetary recompense for all that you went through, and let's kind of just move the page, you know?
Well,
so how do you get it if they're unwilling to give?
Well, the first response I want to make to what Cameron said is that are those prisons are we going to dig up King James and all the other kings and queens from Europe and put their bones in those prisons? Because I don't know what the prisons are for right now. But here's the thing now, because you're going to give money for prisons, we need to start arresting some, as a matter of fact, arrest him or whoever else is not giving reparations because now they're breaking the law. So the answer to that is it doesn't matter what their opinions are. Reparations is the law. That means that if you have a home and I kick down your door and I beat up your family and I take everything out of your home and then they catch me, okay, so I'm going to go to prison, and not only am I going to prison, I'm also going to have to pay restitution for what I took from you. Now, let's say it was organized, because it wasn't individuals. It was organized, like an organized crime gang, except it was a nation state. And, you know, we know how the history of that goes. Most of these nations, like the British or the Anglo-Saxons, the Franks, you know, even the Iberian Peninsula, they came from gangs, were Goths, and the Goths became, well, the Goths was a gang. They became a tribe, and they became a nation state. So they came from that. So it was gangsterism and theft that got us in the position that they got us into collectively, right? So this is organized crime in the state. They got something called RICO. You know how you deal with organized criminals. Yeah. But my point is that I'm getting to a point. So the UK as it exists is a legacy nation state of organized crime. And that organized crime was transatlantic slavery. That organized crime was colonialism. That organized crime was all of the Anglophone nation states today in Africa, in Asia, and the Americas and the Caribbean who are still under the actual poverty and resource rape and lack thereof from not getting reparations and restitutions and from their colonialism, neocolonialism, and neo-imperialism that they have over us. So to shortly answer that, though, is the fact that him making that statement is criminal. That's a crook who is a part of an organized crime empire that's gone on for centuries that haven't paid back the people that they robbed and committed their gangster crimes against. So my answer to that is Cameron is actually, what's the best way to put it? He's pandering on organized crime. Okay. And human, just like human traffickers, human traffic today, the British were human traffickers. They human trafficked us. There was rape involved. There was all sorts of things involved in their human trafficking of us. And the difference between, human trafficking is horrible, but ours was worse because in that human traffic, there's not a Bahamian today who really, no, I don't care. You can do all the ancestry, DNA, you know, really some of that stuff is like cosmetic. And some of that stuff is like art. You know, it's not really that empirically tangible, but you can do it if you want to. Ancestry DNA, there's not a Bahamian right now who truly knows what nation state or tribe they came from on the continent of Africa. Right. Those who are of African descent. So what happened to us? We were robbed of our identity. We were robbed of our morality, our humanity, our folkways, our culture, our mores, and our norms, and our names. Just imagine this, and I'm going to be real quick with this. Imagine there's a ship, and you have a pregnant woman on that ship, because that was how these are facts and how some of the written stories go, right? And she was pregnant because somebody on the ship raped her, who basically one of the captors. And they hang her upside down, slice her stomach open, the baby come out, they kill the baby. Take the strongest man or big, bulky black man they could find, and they turn him upside down, emasculate him. They call that buck breaking and winch breaking, all of that. Have skirmishes, have us all come out and we watch, and they tie the man up, have horses and large animals bound to him and have beat or shoot them and have them go in the opposite direction to tear us apart. And the same thing with the pregnant woman. And it was intentional for us to see that because they had what was known as seasoning camps where they dehumanized us. So the problems that we go through was intentional. They socially engineered us in an obtrusive way. Some people who go through trauma, it's because you witnessed that or you experienced that by someone who just attacked you. But it was methodical for them. They got together to do these things. So when we would sit and watch this, we would ooh and ah, and we'll be beaten, shot, and harmed. We weren't allowed to express sympathy or empathy for each other either. Then they'd be like this, you know, oh, what's your name? Your name is Babatunde? No, today, boy, you know, your name is Joseph today. Today, boy, your name is Charles today. Today, boy, you know, your name is Bobby. Your name is Robert. What's your family name? Your family name is Omawale? No longer today, boy. Roll, and I'm Lord Roll, and this is who you are today, boy. And so this is what happened to us. And then they walk like this, talk like this, think like this, and we wonder why we have so much division. It's because they impose this obtrusively to us, and we have psychological issues as a result of that. There's something I diagnosed that we have as a traumatic Black African Holocaust disorder. There's some things we don't understand. So real quickly, in the States, let's say, for example, you know, you're riding around in your car. A lot of us go through this. And a police officer pulls up behind you, right?
Mm-hmm.
you haven't committed a crime. You know, your registration is okay, your license is okay, but because right. you see that car, now you're sweating. You're like, oh, I hope they don't pull me over. That's not sane. It's insane.
Right.
But let's deal with it like this now, because here, the faces are black. Same problem, though.
Right.
And why is that the same problem? Because in our social engineering with the trauma, the people who were so-called authoritarian figures was also connected to the oppressor. So it's still the same thing. So we suffer from psychological issues that are unresolved. And people ask us questions, well, why we act like this? Why your family look like this? Why your community look like this? Because you're dealing with people who were traumatized. Transgenerational trauma is what it's called. And our trauma, our trauma was never dealt with. So we're dealing with generations of trauma. So when you see Bahamian people and Caribbean people, how resilient we are, that's because of us. But all of us have what we call in the sciences, a maladaption to what's going on. Mm-hmm. Meaning that we created function out of dysfunction. In order to be functional, we need reparations and restitutions and justice.
Right. I look at our own culture, and I know you're somewhat familiar with what's going yeah. on. And I know you were over the hill
yes.
Just the other day. And so Over the Hill started as a community where a lot of freed slaves went.
Yes.
A lot of freed Negroes who came to the Bahamas. They yes. built communities there. And we eventually had majority rule in the 1960s and independence in the 70s.
Yes.
And out of Over the Hill came this huge political movement that actually changed the economic structure of our country. A lot of people who left Over the Hill left it and never looked back, right? And so you would see, and you were there, so you'd see Over the Hill, right? So let me put it like this to you. You came in through Lyndon Billings International Airport.
Yes.
One of the nicest airports in the Caribbean. Yeah. You rode on beautiful roads.
Yes.
And saw the beautiful resorts and
yes.
all this.
Yes.
And then you went to Over the Hill.
Right.
And you saw people living in clapboard houses.
Yes.
You saw people who don't have running water in their homes.
Right.
You saw people who are living sometimes in rags. Not to say that they're below any dignity, but just that there's this duality that exists in these former slave colonies where a lot of people forget those who still don't have the capacity to kind of rise up by themselves. And I wonder how we sort of balance that out moving forward.
Well, the first way of balancing is the fact that just how you acknowledged and you saw what's going on is to even realize what's going on, that this actually exists. Here you got big resorts and big things in one area, and you got people living in poverty in another area. And you know how the saying goes in the Caribbean, that there's no rich and poor in the Caribbean. No middle class and low class. There's just rich and poor is what I meant to say. You either rich or you're poor. And that's really what it is. And all that is, again, is a dynamic of the offshot of neocolonialism and neo-imperialism and colonialism. So how that's dealt with is the fact that just acknowledging the fact that people are living like that and for us to collectively come together to make better because, see, it's a real tricky thing they've done to us because divide and conquer is very serious, you know, and I don't want to get too far off, but let's deal with it like this real quickly. And I'm staying on topic, but I just, you know, that's that storytelling. But anyways, it's like
no,
that.
I'm with you. Go ahead.
So let's say like this. Okay, so we know that the British and what's known in the United States of America today, that was a British colony. They fought the British and, you know, and now, you know, they eventually evolved into what became the United States of America, right? So in the Caribbean, different dynamics, but let's deal with it like this. The British and the Americans didn't really get along like that. And it's so the slaves that they mastered, that division took place too, just like the French and the Spanish on Hispaniola, where you got now Haiti on one side, Dominican Republic on one side. You got the same melanated people. But one speaks Spanish and one speaks French, and they don't get along worth anything because the Spanish and French didn't get along. So what am I getting to? This division dynamic that we have keeps us, for the most part, confused and asleep. Or as we say in the street, you know, not woke, you know, because of the fact that we don't know. So when you have poverty in those areas, it's for us to have a collective understanding of why. And the main reason why is because, you know, like I said, our mission is to feed, clothe, shelter, train, and defend. And why is that? I call it also as the five principles of life outside of just saying law and collectivism, because if you don't have food, you're going to cease to exist. If you don't have the garments or clothing to properly, you know, protect yourself or just to wear, the elements will tear you apart. And even hygiene will be an issue. If you don't have shelter and habitation, you know, you can lose your life. Training and skills or the ability to protect and defend yourself. So that's why that's the mission and purpose. And that's why in a community like that, our work you know, being grand and great would be and is to be and is being grand and great to make people better and also to bring into existence a self-sufficiency. Because some people say, well, how do you make that situation self-sufficient? I guess that kind of answers the questions too. Mm-hmm. How do you get the people who you're serving that don't have clothes, shelter, and ability to do all these things for themselves? How do you do it? So the first step is once you serve the people, you also help people understand collectivism, because that's very important. That what is collectivism? It's kind of what our ancestors here in the Bahamas always did. You know, if I'm making some Johnny cake and I only got the flour, but you got the sugar, right. You got the milk, you got the egg, that's collectivism. Right. So bring it all over and let's make this Johnny cake. Right, that's collectivism. Right, yeah. So we also have to know what we have to help each other, because we all got the abilities to help each other. So we teach in that way collectivism, but we also teach how to grow your own food, how economic literacy, people actually getting trained and re-educated, you know, whatever kind of skills you have, trying to help people get jobs so they're able to do for self. And also, too, I was speaking of this before, you know, there's gangs, you know, that exist in the Bahamas, but I'm going to just keep it 100 again. United States government is a gang. Britain is a gang. These gangsters did all kind of stuff, and they still do the stuff they claim gangs here do. Right, the claim, the allegation. They say, well, they show drugs and they human traffic people. Well, the U.S. government and Britain and all that, they human trafficked us. I mean, we exhibit A and exhibit B and exhibit C, and we was going to court in the legal issue. But getting back to the point. So my point with them is this. I know that there's some brothers and others who cannot go to certain communities because of their affiliation, right? So my message to the gangs is that there needs to be a treaties, you know, a treaties. I'm not trying to get involved in their business. That's not my business. The same way the government do that, that's not my business. My business is us having peace and ability for these people to go and do their jobs and work and stuff like that. The next thing is that for the government, a lot of people here who are suffering in those areas, some of them have criminal backgrounds. So for the government, so I'm appealing to the government to help those with criminal backgrounds get jobs, you know, help them do basically, you know, get themselves together in a way that doesn't reflect and they can actually be able to sustain and do for self. So the other dynamic is showing people again how to grow their own foods, economic literacy, you know, how to structure their communities in ways and just to understand the value of resource, because we look at money and we think that's a solution. That's not the solution. It's just a tool or a resource. And I'm not a capitalist. I'm a socialist. But I'm just saying, but people get that confused too. See, capitalism is an actual focus on capital value versus human value. To simplify socialism, it's a focus on human value versus capital value. In socialism, capital is used, but it's used for the people. Meaning that socialism is a matter of from each according to their ability to each according to their contribution, which means there has to be contributions. It's not necessarily a handout system. It's a collectivism, because the end game and the end goal is a higher level of that, where there's self-sufficiency, where it becomes from each according to their ability to each according to their need. So now the ability is here and the need is there. But prior to that, you have to be collective and contribute. So I hope in a short way, well, a long way, that answers your question.
No, I mean, you make a lot of good points. We've kind of drifted, and you'll be no stranger to this. We went kind of into, and this happens a lot over the world, we use a capitalist system to fund socialist programs.
Right.
You understand? Yes. So, like, we use the money, the revenue we collect from capital enterprises to fund healthcare, to fund food programs, but it's just housing programs, but it's just not enough.
Yeah.
Now, when I look at advancement, and you've been at this for a long time, and I just practice it in my head most times, but when I look at advancement, I look at it as a multi-level process, right? Yeah. So it's a step-by-step, day-by-day process. So you have long-term goals, you have immediate goals, you have medium-term goals, et cetera. So I understand that you are starting a chapter. Where's the chapter, and what are your immediate goals, and what are your medium-term goals, and what are your long-term goals in order to see this bring some sort of change in the community? Because we need all the help we can.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the actual HQ location is at, 68 Alexandria in Nassau Village, right? Where where Foam Community Center is.
Yeah, Nassau Village.
And Sister Gibson is actually the local leader of the Bahamas chapter.
Okay.
Yeah, so here's how that works out. So our short-term goal is to basically make sure that we can feed, clothe, shelter, train, and defend as many people as possible in Nassau Village, but throughout the entire Bahamas, Nassau, New Providence, and then the all the way to Abaco, Freeport, the Family Islands, everything together. So that is our goal in particular, to make sure that we can actually serve our people, number one. and provide for their needs. So that, I guess, that's the short-term goal. The long-term goal is to do so much where we're able to put together a process of self-sufficiency of the people. So it's the beginning goals. And the question is, how do we get there, right? So in order to get there, so we have food programs established in the community. In order to get there, clothing programs established in the community. In order to get there, putting together shelter programs for the community. But not only shelter programs, stuff related to how to deal with what they call like crown land and other different things mm-hmm. for the people. So the people are able to have for themselves, to have their own stake in their own plot. And also, you know, like I said, training, financial literacy, career programs, programs for people to get certified in different trades and skills and stuff like that. And just a protection and defense program where the people are able to at least be safe. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And that also involves that appeal to what I said to the, what in the States we call them street tribes and stuff like that. But that's what they are, tribes and nations and gangs, so that we're able to have a treaties where we can have that peace on that level as well. Mm-hmm. And also peace from the government too. And so that's one dynamic. The next thing is once we're able to put the programs properly together where the people are able to be at a position where they can do for self. So the long-term goal is that self-sufficiency. But the major part of getting all that together is making sure we get this reparations thing in order. So what we're putting together is a unity conference in the Caribbean. There is an international unity conference that we're going to be doing in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, for the continent and diaspora who's able to participate in that. And that's going to be May 27th through the 30th. Our international headquarters is in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. That's our international headquarters.
Excellent.
And so we're going to be doing that. But also in the Caribbean, we're putting together something where we're able to unite in a way to deal with these issues. United to deal with reparations against the former oppressor. United to deal with, to do away with the poverty in the Caribbean. So you don't have little towns and places like where Nassau Village is, and you have people in poverty like that, to alleviate that. And the best way to do that is to unify and come together to come up with a plan. So there's a 22-point plan and program we have together. With the Bahamas chapter alone has that plan and program, but to collectively deal with everything we need collectively in the Caribbean to get better and to get out of poverty.
Well, it's great talking to you, and we're out of time, but
yes.
I sincerely hope that the next time you're here, you'll come and stop by again.
Absolutely,
so
I will.
More.
I definitely
if people
will.
Want to find out more about the Revolutionary Black Panther Party, what you're doing in the States,
yes.
in Africa,
yes.
In the Caribbean, where can they find out more information?
You can reach us. So you can go to our website at www.therevolutionaryblackpantherparty.org. That is www.therevolutionaryblackpantherparty.org. If you're interested into, we haven't updated some things on the podcast broadcast in a while, but you can also hear more information at www.blogtalkradio.com/Revolutionary Black Panther Party. That is www.blogtalkradio.com/Revolutionary Black Panther Party. And again, you can reach us at www.therevolutionarypantherparty.org, or you can call our WhatsApp. You can reach us on WhatsApp at 242-814-7318. 242-814-7318. That's 242-814-7318. You can call that on WhatsApp or on your regular phone. And definitely, I appreciate you for the invitation. And I
appreciate you coming through, man. It's been great talking. I regret we had so little time. You know, because I know people wanted to call and people wanted to text in questions as well. But thank you for coming.
And real quickly, if I can say this. So
sure.
My son, who is, his name is Naeem Carter. Mm-hmm. In the States, you know, I don't have time, so I'm going to just summarize this. You know, we're just not oppressed by law enforcement and the courts dealing with, you know, depression. We're oppressed in schools, on the streets, all type of stuff, but even in the medical arena. And so he was what we call medically murdered. You know, people can look that up. His name is Naeem Carter. Carter, and we also have the Justice for Naeem Carter movement. His name was Naeem Carter, and his medical murder was June 14, 2021 in Nemours Children's Hospital. So it's an international movement we're doing, and this movement is to basically deal with racism and the targeting of certain type of people in the medical industry, children, black people, and elderly people who are targeted the most.
Okay, excellent. All right, Dr. Ali Muhammad, pleasure speaking with you. Great
Thank
to
you.
Have you here.
Thank you.
All right,
Thank
that's going to do it for the show today.
You
guys take care out there. You can find out more about the Revolutionary Black Panther Party at the website. And Lord willing, we'll be back tomorrow.
Yes.
Have a great day, Bahamas.